Again, we're going to talk about we'll rust out before we wear out. I've tried to tell you this week philosophy of where I'm coming from, that it's more important for you to have spiritual health than physical health. We're going to have pain and suffering in this life. It's there. It's part of what Satan is trying to do to us. But if we can be at peace with Jesus Christ, it doesn't matter what Satan throws at us. Do you believe that? I need everybody to stand so we can pray over these prayer praises and prayer requests. And my whiz kid, Michael, I need heart day 5. Dear great Father, thank you so much for letting us be at camp meeting. There have been so many people that have cried for their families, for themselves, for cancer, for relationships. We pray over these prayer praises and prayer requests that you will have your hand involved in this and you will be with each one of us, giving us spiritual health, physical health, and mental health. In your Son's name, Jesus, the most powerful name in the universe, amen. Again, I want to thank American Cassette Ministries for offering you my health lectures. You'll rust out before you wear out on the back table. Some of us have been discouraged. Some of us have been to the point of not even coming to camp meeting. I've had several of you tell me that something told you you had to be here. How do you overcome? How do you get the handle on this? How do you control stress? How do you get to where Christ is the center of what you're doing, everything, every moment, every time? These are of ages, 6, 6, 8. And if we consent, He will so identify Himself with our thoughts and aims, so blend our hearts and minds into conformity to His will, that when obeying Him, we shall be but carrying out our own impulses. Do you believe that? Those who decide to do nothing in any line that will displease God will know, after presenting their case before Him, just what cause to pursue. Is that an answer to prayer? We've talked about how to claim promises this week, how to kneel down and pray till it doesn't matter anymore. And that may take you 20 years. It may take you 5 minutes. Michael, my whiz kid, how are we doing? One of the things we've done this week is talked about the Great American Diet. And that's sugar. In Councils on Health, page 150. And from the light given to me, sugar, when largely used, is more injurious than meat. Did you hear that? From the light given to me, sugar, when largely used, is more injurious than meat. Whoa. And what do, as Seventh-day Adventists? We cut out meat and substitute sugar. One of the worst things. Well, Michael, my 14-year-old whiz kid up there, I certainly appreciate him this week. Heart, day 5. One of the other things we talked about is obesity, a brain disorder. Am I fat? That's what we talked about. And we talked about some things that you need to know about. Omega-3, water intake, how to take care of your stomach, and cutting out your sugar. You have to remember that your stomach is not your intestine. It needs to do the work. You don't need to wash everything through it. Optimal digestion takes place in a rested stomach, not a weary stomach. Given proper time between meals for the stomach to recover so it can digest your food. The stomach excretes 2 to 3 quarts of fluid a day. You don't need to add to that. The stomach emptying does not mean you're hungry. It sometimes means you're tired. Give the stomach 5 or more hours between each meal so it can be totally rested and you won't be using any of your vital force, extra vital force, to get through the day. 2 meals a day is a good option for many, many people. You know, we did this Monday, I think. Waited for PowerPoint. The PowerPoint is wonderful when it works. I'm going to take a drink of water while we're waiting. Well, they've got the laptop. They can hook it to the laptop. Yes, I figured they couldn't get it up. And this is a very crucial lecture. While they're working on getting that up then, I will change gears. And could we have the video? I was going to put that later in the program. The video is about me dying. It was presented by ACN, Adventist Communication Network, February, a year ago, on First Wednesday. It was done by Dane Griffin. And when you're ready, you can start that. And I'll keep talking till you're ready. Okay, they're ready.
There are few Christians today who do not know the name Judy Walter Bailey and the peaceful sound of her heavenly harp.
He told me that anyone in this much pain needs to be dead.
But very few of her listeners realize what Judy and her physician husband, Royce Bailey, have been through.
Being a physician, I could look at my chart and I said, this person that's in this chart should be dead. And that was after I got better.
Dr. Bailey's brush with death has touched and changed many lives.
And so if you go through a trial, realize that it's going to give you a greater faith in the Lord.
Dr. Bailey's faith has helped me to realize that I can also have that type of faith.
I've seen Dr. Bailey talk about his experience with people, and I've seen how it's touched their lives.
To look at Royce now, you'd never know anything was ever wrong. He's the director of the ICU at Park Ridge Hospital in Fletcher, North Carolina, near Asheville, where he cares for patients every day. He also runs a busy practice right next door with all the pressures and challenges of being a busy cardiologist. So, what brought Royce face to face with death? He's had Crohn's disease, a colon wasting disease, since he was 19 years old. Yet, though in constant pain, few people ever even knew he was ill.
And he's the type that the glass is always half full. I never heard him once complain. The only way you knew that something was not quite right was that he sat in his office and was very quiet.
Judy explains how the trial of their faith began.
I was having an extra close relationship with the Lord, closer than I had had up to that point. And one morning during devotion, my personal time with the Lord, I told him, I said, you know, I think you could test me and try me, and I think I would really still love you if you took away this house, or, you know, I really think that I would still be faithful to you. I think I love you that much. And it was just days later that, 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard a faint little voice in the bathroom. And it was Royce. And he was saying, Lovey, come and get me. Lovey, come and get me. And I went in there and he was in a pool of blood.
The Crohn's disease had caused Royce's bowel to perforate or tear open. And he was rushed to Park Ridge Hospital, where he had emergency surgery to remove his entire colon. Certified surgical technologist Teresa Barnwell explains how Royce's bowel looked.
It was more like a... I can't explain it. When he came out, he literally looked like the Goodyear blimp. He came out on a respirator. And he was unrecognizable.
Complications from the perforated colon were sending Royce and Judy on a journey through the valley of the shadow of death.
And at this, you know, during this time, I was pleading with God to keep him alive, to give him a blood pressure, to help him to breathe on his own and not be on a respirator. And it didn't seem God was answering my prayer.
And we know that it's true, that life is real and so is death. And we've seen it. And we have to be able to face both. But if we face both with a trust in the Lord...
And I remembered I told him that he could give me any test, and I still thought I would be faithful to him. And I said, now, wait a minute, God. I was talking about the house. I was not talking about my husband. And then it hit home. So I have to be willing to give up everything for God.
As tough as it is, and as desperate as it is for you, that if you can just grab hold of that hand of faith, God says he's there for you. And I'm here living proof to tell you that God is there. I should be dead. I shouldn't be alive.
And I said, you know, we've got two precious little girls, and they need a father, and I need a husband. Please heal him. Please keep him alive.
There's no way that I should be sitting here in front of you being able to describe all of this, what God has done. It's a true miracle.
And I would say, okay, God, I know. Your will be done. And I will accept whatever your will is, but keep him alive. Okay, no, I know. I trust in you, and you have said that you know the end from the beginning, and if we would believe that, that we would have it, when it's all said and done, no other way but what the way that you have allowed. But keep him alive. Okay, God, I know you will supply all of our needs, and I know you won't let me down, but keep him alive. And I went back and forth and back and forth, struggling with the Lord.
We strengthened each other. And we talked about the faith we were to have, and about the experiences of the biblical characters. That's a great, ennobling experience and to go through.
And it was hours later that I finally said, okay. Okay. I mean, I was worn out by this point. And I said, okay, God. In my mind, I put Royce in a package, and I covered it with beautiful wrapping paper, put a lovely ribbon on the top, and I can just see myself handing him over to God, saying, okay, he is yours, and I will accept whatever you allow. And it was minutes later, that Roy started maintaining his own blood pressure, and he started being able to be weaned off of the respirator.
I was so sick, had no energy, was so ill, that I couldn't even watch TV. I mean, I was so sick. I couldn't listen to CDs.
To see Royce have to suffer like that was very painful. But all we could do is pray that God would see him through. And we had that incredible faith in God that he would see Royce through.
Worry is blind and can't see the future. We sure can. But if you could see the end from the beginning like Jesus does, and you could see his purposes, you wouldn't have it any other way. And that, I take comfort in that.
How did Royce and his family make it during his 3-month stay in the ICU, where he was treated in a room where he himself has treated and does treat patients?
So I took a promise book that a friend of mine had given me and started poring over the promises and praying and just pleading with God for Royce's life.
It was prayer that really helped Judy so much.
If you will look to this as a learning process and have God as the center of it, and look at the long term, not the short term, that it will make all the difference in the world.
But it was tough getting there. It didn't just happen just by saying, okay, I'm going to have faith. You know, it was a struggle.
Just look back how the Lord has led you in your experience, and see how he took care of you and loved you and coddled you and strengthened you. And that gives great faith when you look back and see how the Lord is blessed.
Friends and family are so important during this time. I can't tell you how much it meant to me to have them come and visit and just be there, just listen.
It's something that you have to decide ahead of time, because once the time comes, I am very convinced that you will not have the strength to follow through on your convictions unless you've made that decision ahead of time.
Many Christians say, well, I'll wait till the time of trouble, or I'll wait till the end, and then I can make my decision. Well, if you don't make it ahead of time, you won't make it. It's got to be something that's been a habit, of something that you have prayed about and worked out with your as your own salvation, and worked out so that it's easy for you to make these decisions once you're in that situation.
Does Royce practice what he preaches?
Dr. Bailey loves the Lord. He has a great faith. He lives his faith. And he is always the eternal optimist. And most of all, you can tell how much he loves the Lord.
But we all know that he had a great faith in his God, and that if it was in God's will, that Dr. Bailey would pull through. And we know that he had that type of faith.
So he takes it very seriously to share his knowledge of God and the love of God with everybody that he comes in contact with.
I just cannot remember him having a negative attitude. I cannot remember him being upset.
Well, Royce is pretty amazing. I never heard him once complain the whole time he was in the hospital, other than saying he was having a lot of pain. But he never once said, why is this happening to me? What have I done to deserve this?
Yeah, I may have been sick, and I may have gone through a lot. And I could do one of two things. I could curse God, or I could praise God. And I have to say that I want to praise God. I made that conscious decision ahead of time.
For Royce and his family, letting their faith in God and His promises guide them through their dark valley only deepened their faith for and trust in God, and strengthened their faith and their desire to serve Him faithfully all the days of their lives.
And I learned that faith is a process. Our faith grows stronger over time. God allows these things to happen to us to develop our faith.
We will have our trials and tribulations. We will have them. And those trials and tribulations many times are the greatest faith builders that God can present to us.
The trial of our faith worketh patience, and that's more precious than gold which perisheth. And I believe that with all my heart.
I feel that God is in control, and God has it all worked out, and I may suffer some more, and I may lose my life over this, and I understand that. And I have to say, then, that's one more nail in Satan's coffin. I think I'll get through this. The reason I told you so much about my family, my great-grandfather, who was going to stay in Africa till Jesus came, who, as best I could tell, committed the unpardonable sin, but should have died there in Africa with blackwater fever, spitting up blood as he was taken out to the ship to go down to South Africa to try to get better. Should have died. Kept alive so that his true character could be seen. Is this the same for me? He said, well, this is fairy tale for this family. It's very Disneyland-like. No, I have to tell you that my brother-in-law, Jim Walter, died at age 25. This family does know pain and hurt. He was with a church group and fell off Mount Whitney. So we do know about death. We know about life in Jesus Christ, too. You're going to rust out before you wear out. Now let's see if this is the right way. It looks like PowerPoint. Wow! You're going to rust out before you wear out without prayer. Have you learned that this week? I hope you have. I've given you some medical facts. But that's not going to do you one bit of good in 100 years. What's going to do you some good? That you have Jesus Christ on your heart, and your heart is softened. Now, I have to tell you this quote, because my father, Seventh-day Adventist, has said when I was growing up, I don't need to pray about these things, these minor things, or the things in my life. God knows the end from the beginning. He knows everything. I don't have to pray about them because He already knows them. But this quote says we do have to pray about them. The natural cooperates with the supernatural. It is a part of God's plan to grant us, in answer to the prayer of faith, that which He would not bestow, did we not, what? Ask. He wouldn't give it to us unless we asked. So, we showed this to my father, and now he asks. But I remember growing up for him saying, well, God knows it all. It's okay. I don't need to pray about it. Thank you. I bounced that so well, and I didn't even move. A poem that a friend of mine wrote, Christy Winter at Loma Linda. She said, it is true that God promises to undertake for us to make all things work together for our good, but He also has His time, His own time in mind. When I think God is doing nothing, is not concerned, or is even unaware of my problem, the truth is, as far as He is concerned, my watch is too fast. We have to have patience, don't we? And sometimes that's the character building in itself. We've already talked about this. I will still take your prayer praises and prayer requests today. Will not have time to do any of your questions other than outside afterwards. And I am happy to do that as long as we need to be here. Let's say our quote together. Worry is blind and cannot discern the future, but Jesus sees the end from the beginning. In every difficulty, He has His way prepared to bring relief. Our Heavenly Father has 1,000 ways to provide for us of which we know nothing. Those who accept the one principle of making the service and honor of God supreme will find perplexities vanish and a plain path before your feet. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? Amen. Thank you. I'm hoping that you will put this on your heart, because when I was laying there almost dead in that bed, so weak I couldn't do anything, this was the only quote that could come to mind. I couldn't think of anything else. And this was hard to come by. This is the one that kept me going, because I knew God was in charge, no matter what's happened to me. The heart of... It happens when I turn this way. What's the deal? Oh, it's not that. Okay. This is the heart of the matter. This is our quote, Jeremiah 31, 33, and 34. It's also in Hebrews 10, 16 to 18. But this is the covenant which I will make with the house of Israel, and are we not the spiritual house of Israel? Yes. After those days, says the Lord, I will put my law within them. I will write it upon their hearts. I will do what with it on their hearts? Write it on their hearts. And I will be their God, and they shall be my people. For I will forgive their iniquity, justification, and I will remember their sins no more, blotting out of sins, Old Testament. People say, well, that isn't in the Old Testament. There it is. Truth about canola oil. I had to throw this in because several people asked about it. Recent reports, there is danger to rapeseed oil. And they're right. It is very dangerous. It's mechanical fluid. But canola is very low in uric acid. But rapeseed is very high in this acid. And they're not the same. But frying any oil is dangerous, including canola. You don't want to do that because it becomes like varnish. Canola can be used in baking, and any oil in excess can cause your blood to cease to flow. It can cause clotting and stiffness. Canola seeds are not rape seeds. They're totally different. They're not genetically engineered. If you have canola, we got a lot of canola in 2000 for the Y2K. We've used it up, and I've not bought any more. And I'll tell you why here in a moment. Canola's shelf life is only 1 year at room temperature. If you've had some sitting longer for 1 year, it's going to be rancid. Don't keep it. Canola is 7% saturated fat. There is some omega-3 in it. But there's also more omega-6, twice as much. Their sunflower oil has got 12% saturated fat, and you know saturated fat, even though this is a vegetable product, can be made into cholesterol by your liver. Okay, do I need to say that again? Saturated fat can be made into cholesterol by your liver. Olive oil is 15% saturated fat. Peanut oil is 19%. All vegetable oils can be used to suffocate insects. It was said that you don't want to use canola oil because it kills insects, including aphids. Any oil can do that. It suffocates them. It doesn't poison them. You want to put them on your roses? don't know if that's a good idea, but the average American diet ratio is 6-1 omega-6 to omega-3. Canola is 2 parts omega-6 linoleic acid and 1 part omega-3 linolenic acid. So you can do better. And my recommendations are avoid canola because it is too high in omega-6 ratio. You can do better than that. Now, we've had some stuff this year, just the last 2 months, come out in Annals of Internal Medicine on single fatty meals. What does it do? It causes the coronary reserve, which is your microcirculation where the blood goes through single file in your heart. It decreases it after a single meal in healthy young men without coronary disease by 18%. Ouch. Triglycerides increase from 100 to 250 in 5 hours. Those of you that had high triglycerides, there may be part of the problem. It causes endothelial dysfunction. This is the one cell layer lining to your blood vessels. They don't work. They get sticky. They're living. They're alive. They're not static. Fats and oils in the diet cause a sludging of the blood flow. We can see prior to a meal, all the cells are separated and they go through very fine, single file. 1 hour after, they start to stick together. At 4 hours, they really get clumped up. And at 6 hours, after a fatty meal, they're sludging. And you don't want sludge in your pipes. The number one time to get heart attacks is after their big meal in the evening, 6 to 8 hours later. We see it usually at 4 to 6 in the morning. Usually Monday morning. Because they got the stress of work, plus they overate the day before. It takes 12 hours to completely unclump those red cells. Now we've got some controversy in cholesterol right now. High cholesterol, we've always known, can increase heart attacks and strokes, and has always been associated with that. But what about low cholesterol? Are you at risk for early death also? Here is a hemorrhagic stroke. That's a bleeding into the head. And yes, this is what you get if your cholesterol is chronically low. Low cholesterol is 20 years apart without taking medication. I need to go back one, Michael. I didn't touch that one. Low cholesterol, that's not my fault. Low cholesterol 20 years apart was linked to higher mortality in Japanese Americans. The cause for death appeared to be bleeding strokes, not heart attacks or clot strokes. So, a genetically low cholesterol of less than 178 after the age of 70 may be dangerous. And the way to counteract that is to get your omega-6 and omega-3 ratio 1-1. 1-1. Not 6-1 like every other American is. Alright, anger. Anger. Anybody ever get angry? I told you early in the week that I had quite an anger. I enjoyed being angry. It felt good. I don't know why. It just felt good until it got out of control, and I'm going to show you how it got out of control when I was in medical school. 15% of coronary heart disease deaths occur before the age 65, and it doesn't appear to be just from hardening the arteries. Chronic anger is just as hard on your heart as having hypertension or high cholesterol. Angry people have an increased platelet reactivity, hyperaggregability, so hyperclotting, you'll make scabs easier, and have an increased cardiovascular reactivity. You can get spasm or Charlie horse in your blood vessels. If that happens, blood won't go through, and you can still have a heart attack. I've done heart caths on people that have those. We look in there, and there's no blockage in it whatsoever. It's clean as a whistle. But the heart is dead where that blood supply was going to. Anger causes increased catecholamines like epinephrine and norepinephrine. And this can increase your heart rate, change your blood pressure, and push you over the edge to having an event. Yes, this is me in medical school. I was angry at Sears. They didn't give me a $25 refund that I required for some paint I returned. And I got overwhelmed with that. Now, my heater had broken on my waterbed. Yes, I had a waterbed. I'd gotten it as a gift to me when I got into medical school. Somebody didn't get into medical school, so I took it off their hands.
My waterbed
had lost its heater, so it was cold. I was sleeping on the floor. I said, there's no reason for me to sleep on the floor. I'll fill it back up, and I'll just put blankets on it because it's cold. It really, that kind of cold goes right through you. I got angry at Sears, left the water running, went off to pathology class at Evans Hall, which we saw the pictures there of my grandfather in that same building. And I was seeing my first pathology of an acute appendix under the microscope. And Dr. Small was there, and all of a sudden, I remembered, because I'd been angry, I'd forgotten that I left my waterbed running. I did not drive. I lived two blocks away. And I ran down University Street as fast as I could. I told Dr. Small, I said, I left my waterbed running, goodbye! Right in the middle of class. And I got there to the house, and this is what the waterbed looked like. The cat over in the corner was playing with a bubble on top with her fingernails. And I have not been angry, that angry, since. And I've said, this is not good to lose it. This is not healthy. And I ask God for victory. You can have victory too. You don't want to blow up your waterbed. The floorboards in that house are still crooked from that water. Anger is an independent risk factor. High levels of anger during anger recall have produced coronary spasms of narrowed vessels, but not of normal vessels. We see the same thing with low HDL, the happy cholesterol. If you're good cholesterol, HDL is low, you're more likely to have spasm. We took people and put acetylcholine inside their coronary arteries. If they had a low HDL, they would spasm. If they had a high HDL, the artery would actually dilate, do the exact opposite with the same treatment. So anger also will narrow where there's blockage. In stable angina, meaning there's blockage, but it's not acute, there's not a scab there, anger recall reduces cardiac ejection fraction, cardiac output, decreased diastolic blood pressure, peripheral vascular resistance goes down, and more than exercise or other stressors would cause. Anger will do that. Do you have an anger problem? Do you need to give it to God? Anger in young men, 32 to 48 years old, is associated with an increased risk of premature coronary artery disease, MI, and death. You've heard about the 32-year-old that drops dead. And you go, did he have heart disease that much? So now we know it is what you're eating and what's eating you that causes heart disease. But you've got to be careful what's eating at you. Now, I have to tell you, there's only two pictures of me that we have kept with me on the ventilator. I didn't have a blood pressure for 6 hours in the operating room. My systemic vascular resistance, my peripheral resistance, should be about 1,200. Mine was 100 for about 6 hours. They were putting fluid into me. I went from 135 pounds to 200 pounds the next day because they put so much fluid into me to try to keep my blood pressure up, which I didn't have. I did not know anything. My heart stopped twice in the operating room. Did I see the light? Did I go to the other side? I'm going to tell you no. And I'm going to tell you the physiology reason why you don't. And what is happening in your brain. Are you ready? Do you want to tell your friends as an example of what really is going on? All right, let me tell you. When you have a hypoxic event, low blood pressure event, stress, your brain is there to try to protect you. There is a spot on the RAFA, the fourth ventricle, the top of the fourth ventricle of your brain called the RAFA neurons. When those are stimulated, you can have an out-of-body experience. All of you have had an out-of-body experience. You say, oh no, have you ever daydreamed? Have you been in another place when you daydreamed? That is what these RAFA neurons are doing. So when these people actually see themselves floating above there, the RAFA neurons are doing that. They're not leaving. They're still there on the table. When they see the big bright light, that's the RAFA neurons stimulating them. We can artificially stimulate this with drugs. We can do it with rye yeast, which is LSD. We can have them have an out-of-body experience, and they've never left their body. So you can tell them that it's in the textbooks, it's in the medical books, that they're not having an experience where they're going over to heaven and crossing over. They're actually having a physiologic response from being hypoxic and being under stress. It's totally within the way God created us. Does that make sense? The reason that there are only two pictures of me on the ventilator is Judy thought I was going to die. They came out and told her that I had, they told her 50-50. They told me when I finally was off the ventilator 4 days later that it was closer to 80, 90 that I wouldn't survive after the 4 days on the ventilator. They didn't know what, they thought I was going to die that night for sure. Jillian and Josie, Jillian was 3 and a half, Josie was 2, they would not have known their father. But that happens in families. There are families that don't know their father. Here is my father coming out as a surgeon, Loma Linda graduate. My grandfather, I was able to see before he died at age 92. I was able to recover enough. And he's Loma Linda graduate. He was able to be there to encourage me. He wanted to make sure that everything was going right as a surgeon. Now, if you get squeamish, you can shut your eyes now, because this is a picture I showed a family, and no one else has seen this except family. This is what it looked like. It, close up, it would look a lot worse than this, but that's how I had the cut from here to here, and it was not pleasant. My Crohn's disease, I'd hurt for every day for 25 years, some days worse. I was often on prednisone. And with resection of the colon, I've been pain-free since. So I praise the Lord for that. Now, it hasn't helped the knowing where every bathroom is, because I do. And you want to ask me where one is here on campus? I'll tell you. A matter of the heart, arterial stiffness. This is something we can do with diet and adjust and exercise. It's a leading cause of heart failure with normally functioning heart pumps, stiff ventricles or stiff arteries, stiff pumps. What are the symptoms? They can be ankle swelling. They can be shortness of breath. They can be fatigue. They can be sleeplessness. They can be apnea. They can be moodiness. They can be aching from lack of exercise. Causes of arterial stiffness include aging. You can't fix that one. Obesity, you can. Hardening the arteries. We've talked about how to fix that with natural ways this week. Stress, elevated blood sugar, alcohol and tobacco you can fix. High blood pressure you can fix. Homocysteine, eat more fresh fruits and vegetables. Don't be just a meat and potatoes kind of guy, and your homocysteine level will go down. Elevated cholesterol and triglycerides. We're going to talk about, do you have your numbers with you today? Because we're going to talk about all those. Antibodies to multiple infections. Do you know that's a risk now? Even for coronary disease. If you've had chlamydia pneumonia, if you've had herpes, if you've had any venereal diseases, when you add up to over 6 that make antibodies in your body, infections, H. pylori, Helicobacter pylori, which can be a bacteria in your stomach, counts as one, you can increase the antibody antigen reaction on the lining of that blood vessel and more likely get heart disease. And of course, the great American diet, high fat, high sugar, and high salt diet, fast food. Doesn't that make you just want to run out and get something to eat? You're not going to feel good if you do. You'll feel much better if you don't. So, what are the treatments? Stop smoking. Maintain a healthy weight. Walk around the lake. Exercise. Manage your stress. Eat a high-fiber, low-fat, no-added sugar diet. Get adequate rest. Increase your water intake to 1 ounce per kilo. And your kilo is found by your weight divided by 2.2 pounds, or 2.2. And then spend 15 minutes a day in the sunshine, the back of your legs, your hands, and don't get skin cancer, and don't put sunscreen on it, and do that even in the winter. We want the vessels to be smooth, and as you can see, there's interlacing cells that tuck together like a jigsaw puzzle that make this one cell living layer lining. This is the reason that lasers never worked for opening up arteries, because we'd kill that one cell layer lining. And the body without it makes a scab. It thinks it's injured. And it would always block up. So as you develop the hardening of the arteries day after day, year after year, eating the way the great American diet tells you to eat, you get this hardening and it finally will rupture. And we'll show you some pictures today of what that looks like. Here's the inside of a heart. 4 chambers, the most marvelously arranged invention that you could imagine. It's not the shape that you would do as a Valentine's heart, but it has just enough to give as much cardiac output as changing. At rest, you usually put out about a gallon a minute. Did you know when you exercise, you can put out up to 5 gallons a minute? Did you know that today, right as we're sitting here, there will be somebody in the United States that has a heart attack every 32 seconds? Your heart will pump 7 billion times in your lifetime. And it doesn't stop because it runs out of counts or bullets. It will stop when you have not taken care of it or your genetic predisposition for death occurs. It's an amazing organ. Could not have been through evolution. Could not have happened. Could not have happened. Well, you have a clot here in the artery. You can see it on this angiogram. It should be nice and smooth. You shouldn't have a scab inside. You can make scabs on the outside when you cut yourself, but not inside on your vessels. That's not going to be healthy. This is a little dark, but this is a vascular obstruction. This is called an angioscope. This is a new procedure that we have. You can look down through the coronary arteries, and you can actually see the obstruction. And we blow out the blood so we can see through this, and we can actually see where our obstruction is. Put the light there, and then we can either try to dilate it, balloon it. And the reason the dilation works better than the laser is we're not killing that one cell layer lining. We may stretch it and pull it apart a little, but it still has that lining to protect it. We thought that laser would be such a great panacea, and it doesn't. Now, there's three ways you can have a heart attack. One is from the hardened arteries getting so narrow. Hard. Remember I told you how hard it was? When we do angioplasties, it takes 150 pounds per square inch to open these up. Car tire, 24 to 50 pounds per square inch.
I gotta quit moving.
That does not move anymore. I just stand here frozen. Hardening the arteries, and you can get the spasm when there's an injury. Your body will put out all kinds of chemicals. It will cause a Charlie horse where that injury pattern is. And it can be one of the reasons that you can extend a heart attack. In other words, make it bigger. Then you can get a scab in there. The three different things. You can get the scab, the hardening, and the spasm. All of those can play a role. And when you come into the men's room, I've got to figure out how much is it which. Do you get the clot buster? Do you get the anti-spasm? Do you get something that we need to decide? Do we need to get you to the cath lab so we can balloon it and put a stent in it? Or do we need to just let you settle down, take a look later, see if we can treat it with medicine? Can we do the balloon later with the stent? Or do we need to just suggest it's bad, we got to go to the bypass? And that's really the pathway that we use. Here's the inside of your blood vessel. It has built up this cholesterol plaque. And after time, you will lose some of the layers. Like paint on the old barn will peel off, and you will have a raw spot, which will make then a scab. This is how you get the obstruction. The scab will occur, and this doesn't have to be just in your heart. If it happens in your brain, it's called a stroke. If it happens in your lung or your kidney, it's called an infarct. In your heart, it's a heart attack. Here is a heart attack that has happened in the very front vessel, the anterior descending. That area is all dead. Now, it doesn't go away. It makes a scar. It's thinned. And you usually can survive if it's less than 25% of your heart. Now, I have some people that have lost up to 40% of their heart. But they've not done it all at once. They've done it in little pieces. All at once, you're dead. I can't save you. And we can follow the electrocardiogram, EKG, to see how the damage is done. And we're going to talk about electricity in the heart here in a moment. Because there was an amazing lady that predicted it long before it was popular or even understood in modern science. Angina pectoris, first written up in the English literature in 1772. There is a disorder of the breath marked with a strong and peculiar symptoms considerable for the kind of danger. I can read it. Danger belonging to it and not extremely rare, of which I do not recall any mention in the medical literature. The sense of strangling and sense of, anxiety at which it is attended may make it not improperly called angina pectoris. And that's where the name came from. 1772. Here is an electron microscope of your blood vessel lining. It should be relatively smooth. There are some lumpy bumpies on this one. This is the beginning of hardening the arteries. We showed you a picture earlier in the week of a 19-year-old aorta that had died during Korea. He had already streaks, cholesterol streaks in his aorta. 19 years old, already on the Great American Diet, from Korea in the 50s. Up closer, you don't want these lumpy bumps. You want it to be smooth. So we either, if you're not going to change your diet, we're going to tell you to take aspirin because that will make your platelets slick and they will go across these bumps, or we'll get 6 ounces of purple grape juice, which will do the same thing without risking you have a bleeding stroke if you were to have a leak in your blood vessel. Here is where some of the red cells and platelets are starting to aggregate and pull and cover up. Again, you want this nice and smooth. And here is a cholesterol-filled plaque. Do you see all the cholesterol bubbles in there? That's what we don't want. And if you change your diet, that can be reversed. That can be reversed. Now, you got your cholesterol numbers? We've got the bad cholesterol, LDL. We've got the very low density lipoprotein, which is the carrier protein for your triglycerides. And we have the HDL, which is the happy cholesterol. Both or all of these have two subtypes that we're now aware of, and there's intermediaries as well. There's several different sizes. But we're worried about the big fluffy ones, which are healthy, even in the bad stuff, or the little tiny dense ones, which the reason that is a problem for LDL when they're mostly dense, and it's usually seen in the Great American Diet, not in vegans. But those little dense molecules of LDL, those lousy cholesterol parts, can wiggle down between the junctions of that jigsaw puzzle of that endothelium. And they get under there, and they irritate that lining. And then you start up a reaction, just like if you had a splinter in your skin and you got it all red and pussy, the same thing happens on the inside. And you can have a nice, good HDL level. But if it's all dense, little dense molecules, it's not going to do you as much good as the nice, big, fluffy ones. And that's what we found with people that drink alcohol. Their HDL levels are really high. But the HDL is all the dense little ones, and they're not as protective as the big, round, fluffy ones. And you can get these subtypes now, but mostly what we've given you with the finger stick is what we're predicting on. The problem is, we found if we don't test for these dense molecules, we're going to miss about a third of you with normal cholesterols. Because I have patients that have cholesterol of 180, and they have a heart attack. And they go, "Doc, how come I had an heart attack? My cholesterol's okay." Because their LDL, even though it may have been normal, was not normal. It was a normal level. It was not the normal kind. They had a lot of dense ones. I have been burned many times, more than I'd want to tell you, when we do an angiogram and we see an 80% narrowing. We say, that's the problem. Let's get it taken care of. They come in a month or 6 weeks later and they've had a heart attack from the 15% narrowing. Because that was the place where the lesions and the dense molecules were, and that was the one that was reactive. About 15% of all narrowings in the coronary arteries are reactive. In other words, they're the ones that will rupture and be in trouble. We don't have to worry about the other 85%. We can't tell which one's which yet. So it's tough, and the way to do that is to change your diet. All right, a busy slide, but we have the LDL, the very low density lipoprotein, and the big L, little PA, LPA, and those will react when the macrophages see this cholesterol crystal, this oxidized cholesterol that the LDL is carrying. Now, the LDL carries the cholesterol to the arteries. The HDL carries the cholesterol back away from the arteries to the liver. That's why it's the good guy. The HDL is important, but when you get the macrocyte, it then sees the toxic LDL or dense LDL, the oxidized, cooked cholesterol, like egg, cheese, milk, meat. It will then change into a macrophage, which will then become a foam cell as it sucks all this toxic stuff up. But that toxic stuff never goes away. They are petrified in there. It's permanent. And those cells then become part of your cell wall. And then we have a reaction going on. And soon that pimple in there will rupture, and you'll be in trouble. Again, a very busy slide, but we've got the injury to the lining of the blood vessels causes the platelets to stick. The platelets then release their prostaglandin growth factor, which makes more vessels, more cells come and join the attack because they're trying to seal off this blood vessel. The human body is amazing. If you take a machine and it leaks someplace and you stop that leak, the whole thing will stop. But you can stop a leak in your finger and everything will keep circulating in your body just like it should. Pretty amazing. So we get the injury pattern. It starts out with inflammation, makes a scar, and we get this then cholesterol plaque that's there. And that builds up every time you eat something that's inappropriate. Now, I've got some pictures here of heart attacks. These people obviously survived in this drawing, but Dr. Netter drew these to show you what they look like before they died because they wouldn't have been scarred in. You've got scar there, and it's thin, and it doesn't move. So you can lose your pump. But with a good diet and exercise, even with a cardiac output or ejection fraction of 20%, I have people playing golf. Now that's 20% of their heart function is working. But because they've gotten so good at compensating for it and have done all the right things, they've done relatively well. They're not as good as they were 20 years ago, but they've survived. And we found a lot of these things. I had a professor, Dr. Hardy, strict vegetarian, had a heart attack, was so frustrated that he even had a heart attack. Both his parents died a lot sooner than he did, but he didn't die of the heart attack. That's the key, and he's still alive today. A bypass. What do we do with that? People say, well, I've got the blockage out of there. I don't have to worry about it. The blockage, we bypassed the blockage. No, the blockage is still there. In fact, the disease process is still going on. And those that get bypasses think, well, I'm cured. I don't have any more pain. I can go do whatever I want to do and continue what I was doing before. If you do, those grafts will only last 5 to 7 years. They will block off because they are your veins from your legs. They're you, but they are mummified. There's no nerves. There's no blood supply to those veins. And they will have the process of hardening the arteries accelerate a lot faster than the rest of your native vessels that still have are connected. So a bypass graft, unless you actively change your lifestyle, is going to block off, in the rule of thumb, 5 to 7 years. And we have those. They've been 5 to 7 years out, and we find them dead. Now, I have to tell you about the first evidence of electricity. In 1869, there was this little lady with a third grade education that said in Volume 2 of the Testimonies, page 347, whatever disturbs the circulation of the electric currents in the nervous system lessens the strength of the vital powers, and the result is a deadening of the sensibilities of the mind. This was very, very unusual that somebody would say there was electricity in the human body, because we had not proved it in the medical science. Everybody scoffed at this. They said, she's crazy. There's no way that there's electricity in the human body. Well, I have to tell you about Ivanhoven. Ivanhoven was a physician who was about ready to get kicked off the staff of his hospital because in 1902, a lot of years later from 1869, he came up with a newfangled idea that there was electricity in the human heart. And that was heresy. It couldn't possibly be. Now, back then, they didn't use stethoscopes like we use today. They were just feeling pulses. And that's how they could tell if somebody had an irregular pulse or had a problem with their heart. They had not started to use stethoscopes yet. The United States was even 10 years later than Europe for using stethoscopes. Ivanhoven had this been tinkering in his laboratory about 2 blocks away from the hospital, and he told the attending, I want you to stand by this patient that had premature ventricular contractions. He'd be regular beat, early beat. Regular beat, early beat. And you could feel that. And he says, I'm going to go down to my laboratory, and I will tell you when those skips occur. And he goes, no way. And if you don't tell me, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. You're off staff. We're not keeping you on this staff because you're too crazy for this. We got to have sane people working at this hospital. We all got to be on the same page. So he said, okay, you go sit next to this lady and feel her pulse. And over this newfangled machine called the telephone, he was able to talk to him two blocks away. First try didn't work because the trolley cars were making too much interference from what this lady was in. She had her arms and legs in a chemical bath, and they ran electricity down the street two blocks to his laboratory to this machine that you see here. But sure enough, second try, he was able to tell the attending, the chief of staff, that yes, these were skip beats, every one of them, now, now, now. And it was the very first proof that there was electricity in the human body. But who had said that in 1869? We didn't have proof of electricity in the brain until a psychiatrist suggested, Dr. Berger, in the late 1920s, but still not accepted in the medical science until the Mayo brothers of Mayo Clinic in the early 1930s started to do electroencephalograms, EEGs, to prove there was electricity in the human brain. Now, I've talked a lot about Mrs. White this week. I have to tell you, at my hospital, Adventist Hospital, I heard two Adventist physicians talking. And they said, do you still believe in Mrs. White? I sure don't. So what am I telling you here? There's a lot of churches that are not using Mrs. White because they say she's old-fashioned and not for our time. So far, everything we've used this week, we've talked about why she talked about cheese because the whey is out of it and it's too acidic. We've talked about music and how it affects the brain. We've talked about competitive sports and how she talked about that. We've talked about these controversial things. And she's been right, physiologically, from the Bible, expounding on the Bible, every single time. So if we can say that as a third grade education, she knew these things way before her time, we must say that she was given supernatural intelligence. Well, there's only two sources for supernatural intelligence. One would be from God, and one from the devil. If you say, I'm going to pick and choose on Ellen White, then you're denying that what she said was of God. And then, of course, the logic follows, then you are saying that she is of the devil. Because she had to know these things, supernaturally. So if she's right about the medical science over the last 140 years before her time, then she's right about the truth about God and the great controversy. Then she's right about the Sabbath. She's right about the health message. She's right about the importance of the Ten Commandments. She's right about understanding the righteousness by faith. She's right about the state of the dead. She's right about hellfire. She's right about the second coming. She's right about sanctification and overcoming and cleansing, not just covering sin. She's right about the nature of Christ. She's right about what happened in 1844. She's right about, in 1888, we learned that we could live without sin. She was right about Christ being in the heavenly sanctuary and is our high priest today. It's not figurative. He's there. She's right about we being spiritual Israel. She's right that today we are the remnant, and that remnant is called the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It's a matter of the heart. As I talk to you, I try to portray this week where I'm coming from. And I want you to understand this, that I want you to have spiritual health, physical health, and mental health. But we live in a sinful world. What should a Christian's first response be when they are confronted with stress, trauma, and disaster? What if you had anthrax? What if you were exposed to anthrax? What if we had a nuclear holocaust? What if we had some terrorism event? What would your response be? We had a lot of people after 9/11 go to church for 1 week. Fall on your knees and plead with God for our very souls. Rest with God like Jacob. Patriarchs and Prophets, page 203. His experience, Jacob's, testifies to the power of inopportune prayer. It is now that we are to learn this lesson of prevailing prayer, of unyielding faith. The greatest victories to the Church of Christ or the individual Christian are not those that are gained by talent or education, by wealth or favor of men. They are those victories that are gained in the audience chamber with God, with earnest, agonizing faith, lays hold upon the mighty arm of God. But all who will lay hold of God's promises as did Jacob, and be as earnest and persevering as he was, will succeed as he succeeded. You believe that? Okay, let me read that again. You've got to hear this again. But all who will lay hold of God's promises as did Jacob, and be as earnest and persevering as he was, will succeed as he succeeded. Shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Now is the time to decide, to be on the Lord's side, not when you are grieving, sick, or dying. I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. Too sick. Had to have made the decision ahead of time. So sick, couldn't pull my head up. I have looked death in the face. If I keep my faith in Jesus and not do what my great-grandfather did and leave the church. What? But I'm so weak. I can't do anything. God, every time I try to do something, the devil has tripped me up and I just feel miserable. And I keep doing the same thing over and over again. Desire of Ages, page 251. The weak, vacillating character becomes changed to one of strength and steadfastness. Continual devotion establishes so close a relationship between Jesus and his disciples that the Christian becomes like him in what? Mind and character. Mind and character. If we keep our trust in Jesus, we should have no fear. Now this one's a hard one. I'm still learning this one. We have nothing to fear except for fear? FDR? We have nothing to fear except for fear? No, that's not the way the quote goes. Life Sketches 196. We have nothing to fear for the future except as we shall forget the way the Lord has led us and His teachings in our past history. We will fear nothing for the future except we forget all those miracles in this little book. Why does God put all their shortcomings and all their victories in this book? To encourage us, to give us a history, so that we, as the last generation, can overcome. You know, that's probably pretty much every story in here deals with the last generation. The overcomers, that Satan cannot say, well, you know, all these are sinners. What is different about the last generation? They don't need someone in the holy sanctuary mediating for them because they will be walking as one with Jesus Christ. Therefore, Satan will say, you can't do this. Look at all this stuff. I've been keeping a record just like you have. And God will say, but look at my record. It's covered with my blood. It's no longer there. They are safe to save. I can take them to heaven. And you have no claim over them. I shall not fear for emotional or physical destruction. As I say, I'm still working on that one. But I can say that at this very moment, I do not fear physical or emotional destruction. We have to have that kind of faith. Because we don't know what's going to happen. When we leave today, we'll be going to 3ABN for their live camp meeting. My family will be playing. People have asked me, well, what am I talking about? I'm not having to talk. I'm going to be the critic in the background. It's about 7.5, 8 hours from here, and we'll try to get there before sunset. And we want you to pray for our traveling mercies, that the Lord can be praised. This is not us. This is the Lord. And it'll be the three Bailey girls. So we've got harp, dulcimer, and flute. It's all loaded up, ready to go in the harpmobile. You'll rust out before you wear out without prayer. We have not been guaranteed victory over the first death, but only the second. Blessed and holy is he who shares in the first resurrection. Revelation 26. Over such, the second death has what? No power. Do you believe that? No power. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and they shall reign with him for 1,000 years. Yes, that's in the Bible. I've been talking about it all week. I just wanted to show you this quote. I wasn't making it up. It is part of the wages of sin to die on this earth. We are all dying at this very moment. As soon as you're born, you start to die. We are here on this earth for a very short testing time. It may seem like a long time. The suffering and pain may seem like forever. With eternity is in our future. We're here to vindicate God's holy name. We do not die in vain if our hope is in Jesus Christ. Is your hope in Jesus Christ today? Do you know him for physical strength, spiritual strength, and mental strength? Our death, your death, my death, if it comes to that, for whatever reason, in an accident, from cancer, from heart attacks, from a stroke, from grief, if it comes to that, when it's all said and done, and the books are open, and the judgment is there, it will be one more nail in Satan's coffin. One more nail to accuse him of the falsehoods that he's been presenting since he left the heavenly throne room. Victory is ours, whether we live or die. Do you believe that? Do you really believe that? Let's say our text one more time. This is one that I want you to be able to say under duress, that this is what you mean, and it's in every part of your fiber of your body, because this is why I'm here today from this text. I tell you from an honest perspective that I should be dead. I shouldn't be here. God has spared me for a reason. Is that because I'm going to lose my faith like my great-grandfather? Am I going to be stubble for the fire, like Malachi says? Or am I here to tell you as a testimony that I can speak boldly of what I believe because I should be dead? But I should have spoken boldly before I died. Let's say this together. Worry is blind and it cannot discern the future. But Jesus sees the end from the beginning. In every difficulty, he has his way prepared to bring relief. Our Heavenly Father has 1,000 ways to provide for us, which we know nothing. Those who accept the one principle, making the service and honor of God supreme, will find perplexities vanish and a plain path before your feet. Have you memorized that? Is it on your heart now? Go and have spiritual health, physical health, and mental health. And let's not rust out before we wear out.
You've been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright 2002, American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. For additional cassettes by this speaker or for a free catalog of other American Cassette Ministry cassettes, please contact us as follows. To order toll-free in the United States and Canada, dial 800-233-4450. For international calls, dial 717-652-7000. For fax orders, dial 717-652-9050. Our internet email address is info@americancassette.org. Other cassettes may also be ordered from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. Our entire catalog is online, and we accept MasterCard, Visa, and Discover credit cards. Or you may simply write to American Cassette Ministries, Post Office Box 922, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17108 in the United States of America. Maintaining the integrity of the Three Angels' messages for 27 years, American Cassette Ministries requests your continued prayers and financial support as we strive to provide you with the finest, most powerful spiritual messages available. Our one purpose in ministry, to prepare you and your loved ones to meet Jesus Christ. Peace coming soon.